The following paid program does not represent the views of North Shore 104.9. Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. This morning during the program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Financial planning and investment advice is offered through Friedman Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, a member of FINRA and SIPC. Friedman Financial is a separate entity from LPL Financial. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planner professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you. And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial.
Good morning and welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, where we've been providing financial advice in a language you can understand since 1968. We are here in studio each and every Sunday from 8 to 9 a.m. And what we do is we just talk to folks. We just give you some advice about anything and everything as it relates to money. We've been providing financial planning and investment advice since 1968. And we do it primarily for individuals and families that live on the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and the Southern New Hampshire area. It's basically the folks that are listening to this show each and every Sunday. We're glad you're with us today. I hope you've been following the Red Sox. We have Red Sox each and every game right here on North Shore 104.9. They've been playing all right, and it's exciting to get that season back going, and I'm excited to be here like I am each and every Sunday. Well, you know, this past week, as you probably recall, was tax deadline week, and I hope you got your taxes in. Hope you filed them properly. Hope you weren't too disappointed or too excited with the outcome that you got. You know, some people said, Mark, I can't believe how much more money in taxes I owe. Or Mark, I can't believe the refund I got. Well, you know, neither of those things are good. Realistically, what I try to encourage people to do is try to plan your taxes accordingly so that when you do your taxes in April, it's not a big surprise. You know, going into the game, what you're going to get as a refund, what you're going to have to owe, and hopefully that number is next to nothing either way. You see, there's a lot of planning and preparation that you can do ahead of time as you begin to think about what's going on with your taxes. And the best way to do that is to first look at your own pay stubs. You ask yourself, okay, did I get a big refund in April? And if you did get a big refund in April, are you sure that you understand why you got a big refund? There's lots and lots and lots of reasons why you could have got that refund. But oftentimes, and more often than not, is the fact that you're having too much money withheld from your pay. That's right, you're having too much money withheld from your pay, and that way, you know, you're not getting it on a week-to-week basis, but instead you're getting a big refund at the end. And many people seem to believe that when you fill out that tax form with your employer, that if you're married and you have two kids, you must check off married two, because that must mean I'm married and I have two kids. No, that's not it at all. Now, that can be used as a guideline if you'd like. But in reality, you have a lot of flexibility. And if you're working with an accountant, someone from H&R Block, you're working with a CPA, whether it's Jackson Hewitt, whoever it is that you work with, or maybe you do it yourself, there are very easy to find IRS tax tables that give you a sense as to what the withholding would be based upon your income, actually based upon your paycheck that you get. If you're paid monthly, if you're paid biweekly, if you're paid once a week, whatever it is, there's a booklet that you can go to that says if you, let's say you're making $1,000 for the week and you've put in married and two dependent, married's two, you can go to that chart very easily and see what the tax withholding is going to be for your $1,000. But you can also use that chart to say, well, what if I put down married zero or I put down single four? Nobody cares. No one's checking about your marital status, and no one is inquiring as to how many children you might have. All it is a guideline that you can use. In fact, you could even go to your employer and just say, you know what, I'd like to have $300 a pay period withheld from my federal taxes, withheld in federal taxes for my pay. And they can do that. But I want you to really think about it. Ask yourself, was the refund that you got something that surprised you? Is it something that you count on? Or is it something that if you would receive that money over the course of the year, might you plan better with it?
Because oftentimes, you know, you get that big check, you whatever it might look like, and people end up blowing it. You know, they say, well, great, now I can, people would say, oh, well, now when I get my big refund, I'll use it to pay off my credit card, or I'll use it to pay off this. But you don't. You don't. You go, oh, my God, I get this new check. Now I can go, maybe I can trade in my car and upgrade it a little bit. Or maybe we can go out for a fancy dinner or whatever it might be. I want you to think about understanding what the impact of that refund might be. And then there's the other side, of course. Then there's the other side when you say, geez, we owe taxes. I wonder why we owe taxes this year. Well, there's a lot of reasons why you owe taxes. Oftentimes you've had not enough money taken out of your pay, but retirees are the ones that oftentimes become surprised when they owe taxes around tax time. And some of the reasons that they are surprised is that generally when you start taking your Social Security check, they don't withhold taxes unless you specifically ask them to do so. If you take money out of your IRA account or take money from an annuity, and if you don't identify what kind of tax withholding you want, you're going to owe taxes come April. And what oftentimes happens is that early on in retirement, maybe you're, well, it doesn't matter what part of stage you are in retirement, but when you take Social Security, sometimes Social Security is taxed more than in other years, and that's dependent upon the amount of money that you take out of your account. One of the things that we see in our office as people are in retirement is that much of their personal money is held in retirement accounts. Let's say they have $700,000 in IRAs, and they have $50,000 in personal investment accounts, meaning they might have a joint investment account or money in the bank. And so if you need to take $30,000 from somewhere, are you going to take the $30,000 from the $50,000 you have in the bank or in a joint account? Well, maybe you would, but you'd say, well, now I'm only going to have $20,000 left there. And so you say, well, wait a second, I got $700,000 in my IRA. I'll just take it from there. But if you take money from your IRA, that $30,000, all of it is taxable to you. And that $30,000 is added to all of the other sources of income that you have for the course of the year, which could make your tax rate even higher. And remember, in order to get that $30,000 out clean after tax, you probably have to take out $35,000 or $38,000. But most people don't think that. They say, just send me the $30,000 and I'll pay the tax later. So oftentimes it's a surprise, but you know what? Doing your taxes and actually calculating taxes for the average person is not that hard. You know, many people will say, oh, our tax system is incredibly complicated. It is. I mean, there's thousands and thousands of pages to our tax code. But for the vast majority of us, it's really not that difficult. Most of those pages that you see written are for little provisions here and there that may or may not impact you. But for the vast majority of us, you can do these taxes. You know, just this past week, there was a report that came out. I think it was, I'm printing it out here. It looks like it was from the Wall Street Journal. It said that the average American would get an F on tax preparation literacy. Most people don't realize what the different components of your tax return even are. For instance, we've heard of the word a Roth IRA. When you put money into a Roth IRA, is it a pre-tax contribution, a post-tax contribution, or neither of the two? Think about that. When you put money into a Roth IRA, is it considered a pre-tax contribution, a post-tax contribution, or neither? The answer is a post-tax contribution because you're putting it in using what's called after-tax money. Yet only 40% of the people that took this test, over 3,500 people that were given this quiz, got that question right. Another question that was asked that says, can married couples file a separate tax return? Can married couples file a separate tax return? Either yes or no. And the answer is yes, they can file a separate tax return, though in most cases, it makes sense to file a joint tax return. But there are rare instances when it makes sense to file separately. And here's a big one. Here's one that is an interesting question to ask. When can you adjust, you know, we just talked about your withholdings that you have and exemptions on your pay stub. When can you adjust or make adjustments to your withholdings and exemptions on the W-4 with your employer? How often can you do it, or when can you do it? First question is any time of the year. Second is any time before January 1st of each year. Number three, after you receive your W-2 from the previous year's earnings. Or fourth, by the end of year tax deadline. Reality is you can make changes anytime you want with your employer. Now, some employers might have limitations that you can only do it a couple times a month because it's a big company and they only give you the opportunity to make those changes. But generally, you're not restricted on getting taxes withheld or added or having less taken out of your pay stub. You can make those adjustments on your W-4. All you need to do is go to your human resources department, go to the bookkeeper, go to whomever it is that does payroll, and make those changes. I would really encourage you to sit down and really take a look at the refund you got or the amount of money that you owed and try to determine whether it was your tax withholdings or lack thereof from your pay stub that created the excess check or the amount of money that you owed. It just very well could be. Lots of other questions that get asked. Here's one that was interesting. It's called, if you foster a pet from a non-profit charitable organization, that means you adopt a pet from a non-profit charitable organization, can you claim a tax deduction? If you foster a pet from a non-profit charitable organization, can you claim a tax deduction? What do you think that one is? No, you can't write it off. Two, yes, but you can only write off certain items like food, shelter, and medical expenses. Or B, you can write off all expenses. I thought this was a weird one. Frankly, I didn't even know the answer to that one. Actually, if you foster a pet for a nonprofit charitable organization, you can claim a tax deduction for food, shelter, and medical expenses. I mean, you can't. I thought that was kind of interesting. How about this one? If you lend money to a friend and she doesn't pay you back, can you write it off? Yes, you can write off the entire loan. Two, under certain circumstances, it can be deducted under the capital loss rules. Or number three, or letter C, no, you can't write it off. I was under the impression was, no, you can't write it off, but I guess there are few circumstances, according to this report, where you can take a deduction as a capital loss, but I think that would be kind of rare. Here's one that you might like this one. Which of the following is tax deductible? Which of the following items are tax deductible? Gambling losses, sex reassignment surgery, or babysitting if you're a parent doing charity work? Now, my producer here put up three fingers. What do you mean by that, Tony? Third choice is what he's going with. The answer is all of the above. You can take a tax deduction for gambling losses, sex reassignment surgery, and babysitting if you're a parent doing charity work. So yeah, I didn't realize you could take a tax deduction for sex reassignment surgery. Not that I'm looking for an extra tax deduction right now. But just so you could know. Well, that's a lot of things. Lots of interesting tax facts and tax information for you. You know, we're here each and every Sunday providing financial advice in a language you can understand. My name is Mark Friedman, President and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody. You know, each and every week we provide a newsletter. It's called Planning Pointers. It lands in your mailbox at 10:30 every Friday morning. If you'd like a copy of that newsletter, all you need to do is go to my website, FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Just go to the website, go to the bottom of the page, click on the button that says sign up for Mark's newsletter, and boom, you will start getting it. You will and 7,000 other people who already receive this free newsletter. We've been doing it since March of 2009. It's been a long time since we've been putting out this newsletter. I want you to get it because it's got little tidbits, little pieces of advice that you can use, or what we say, financial advice in a language you can understand. When we get back, I got something to tell you. We're about to announce a move, and I'm going to make that announcement when we get back, because what we're finding is when you prepare for a move, you got to decide, what are you keeping? What are you throwing away? what has value and what doesn't. And when we get back, I'm going to tell you all about that and the great news that we're about to announce right after this break. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Isn't it time to get serious about your retirement planning? Friedman Financial is a financial planning and investment management firm in Peabody. They've been helping professionals and retirees put solid strategies into play for 40 years. When you're planning to get serious about planning for retirement, call Friedman Financial for a free initial consultation at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Or go online to FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, Financial.com.
If I had $1 million.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. It is the week following Patriots Day, the weekend following Tax Preparation Day. We got lots of stuff going on here in this state. We got lots of sporting activities going on. Baseball season starting up. Little League starts up in the next couple weeks. The weather's turning. The buds are coming on the leaves. Plenty of pollen out there. I don't know if you've noticed it, but yeah, the allergies are getting tough. You can probably hear it in my voice, but it's just you can never wake up with just a clear head in the morning. And that's, man, do I miss that. I just wanted to just kind of go away and get that little fog away. But hey, I promised you when we came back that I would have this announcement to make. You know, Friedman Financial has been providing financial planning advice in a language you can understand since 1968. And we had said that in April of this upcoming year, we would be celebrating our 50th anniversary. Over the past few months, we've been preparing for that big celebration that will come next year, and that will come into a refreshed design of what our firm will look like, a new website, new logos, all of that stuff. It hasn't been launched yet, but we're working on that stuff right now. But we did make the big decision last week to move our location. We've been located at the red brick office building behind Shaw's Supermarket near the North Shore Mall for almost 15 years. And 15 years prior to that, we were in the gray office condos that were behind the post office. Well, we've decided we no longer want to be behind anything anymore. And we were able to sign a lease this past week at 41 Cross Street. Now, you might say, where is 41 Cross Street? Now, I'm going to tell you, you're going to know exactly where this is when I tell you, because it's not much further. When I can say we're overlooking the North Shore Mall, yes, we're still overlooking the North Shore Mall. We're just not going to be tucked behind Shaw's in that red brick office building. Instead, we're going to go into a new building. Many of you know where Long's Jewelers is on 41 Cross Street as you drive up towards the mall. The Long's is on the right-hand side, and you probably might have the Container Store over on the left as you head up. Well, you drive up that hill, and there used to be a two-family house that was over there that used to sell jewelry. I think it said Semper Jewelry on it. Well, there's a new white office building and retail space that is right there. It's beautiful. Wrapped in windows, beautiful location. The first floor will soon be opened and it will host a restaurant. It's going to be called Arto Forno, which are owned by the same people that own Palana and Daniela's. It's going to open there soon on the first floor. And we are delighted to announce that we will be their other tenant on the second floor. We will have the entire space, private elevator to get up to our office. We'll have signage on the building, so you'll get to know where we are now rather than having to find us inside a building somewhere. So our location's going to be great, easy to get to. We look forward to seeing many of you at our new office when it does open. Now, we're not moving in there just yet. It'll take a little while to build it out. But mid part of September, we hope to be in that space. So it's a project that we'll be working on all summer, and we'll be keeping you up to date on what's going on. But one of the things that you learn when you start to think about moving is the cost ordeal and hassle of moving. Man, it doesn't matter whether you're moving across the street or you're moving 3,000 miles away, because once it's on the truck, it doesn't matter. But it's all that hassle of getting it out of your place and then getting it back into your new place and then unpacking and packing and all that stuff. Well, I think I've told you for many years, since we've been around since 1968, we go through many life cycle events. And unfortunately, we happen to be privy to death. I mean, it happens. When you've been doing this for as long as we have, we average actually one death a month of either a spouse or a client of ours. And we understand the process of what goes in. We also, though, see the aging of our clients. And I see them aging out of their homes and moving into retirement communities. And oftentimes, they begin to think about, oh, my God, well, I know this new location would be great for me. No, I'm not talking about the coffin being the great location. I'm talking about the retirement home being the great location. But there is all this anxiety about moving and downsizing. And so there's this website that I go to on a regular basis. It's called nextavenue.org. Perhaps you've been there before. It's called nextavenue.org. And there's a gentleman by the name of Richard Eisenberg. He's a regular writer for this posting and for this blog, I guess you could call it. And he talks about issues that are impacting seniors. And one of the things that he finds more and more people are concerned about is, what do you keep when you move? And what value does a lot of the stuff have that you think has value? And the reality is that as much as you think your stuff in your home has value, nobody wants it. That's the truth. I know that's tough to hear. I know it's tough to hear when you think, well, we bought this summer place up in Maine or a winter place up in the mountains in New Hampshire. It'll be a great place for all the kids to come and all the grandkids to hang out because that's what you remember from generations before. And you realize that today, the kids don't want to come up. They're too busy. Or what they view as a vacation or time away might not be sitting by the lake or just hanging around talking. I'm not saying one's right or wrong, but what we view as value may not be viewed as valuable to the next generation. And are we prepared for that? Sometimes we struggle with going through our jewelry and we try to put little names or how to identify which pieces will be left to this child or this niece or this granddaughter. And you realize that by naming it all, it can sometimes even cause additional problems. Maybe one of the child wanted something else and was willing to trade off or figure out what they wanted to do. Folks, the stuff that you think has value, make sure that your children view the value the same way. Because if they don't, they're going to get rid of it. They're just going to throw it away. They're going to sell it. It's not going to carry the same level of sentimentality. And the challenge is that perhaps there's one child in your family that will view some of your stuff as sentimental. And other children that won't care. My advice to you is, if that is the case, why not identify the items that do hold that sentimental value, that you want to be sure are enriched and kept within the legacy as an heirloom for the family, and give it to that child now? Why not? I mean, we go up into our attics and we go into our basements and we see boxes and boxes. Like, for instance, if you go into the basement of my house right now, you'll find a box of china that was my wife's grandmother's that's sitting in a box downstairs. I would love to just throw it away. It just takes up space. Is it good china or is it not? I don't know. Does my wife know whether it's good china or whether it's not? Nope. Does my wife's mother know whether it's good china or not? Nope. But can we throw it away? Nope. Why? Why? I don't get it. Why do we have to keep this stuff stored in a box downstairs? Because you know that there's going to be, what are we waiting for, the generation to have the guts to actually take it out to the trash or put it out at a yard sale? Maybe we don't want to put it out at the yard sale and be insulted at the amount of money we might get for it. But meanwhile, it's sitting in our basement collecting dust. Doing what? We got to find the stuff that's important. Yeah, those family pictures. I love those family. I love having the family pictures. I always found it fascinating that when my mom and dad were selling their house, my mom had an oil painting. And I think a lot of people did this back when you were married in the 60s or the 50s. Your parents would hire a painter to do an oil painting of the bride in a bridal gown, right? I mean, I'm sure maybe you still even have it. My mother has hers, a royal painting of her head to toe in her gown. It's got a wooden frame around it. It was up on the wall. And I love that picture. That was my mother's picture. I always remember that being there. When my mom goes to sell the house, I see my mom is taking that oil painting and it's out with the trash. And I'm thinking to myself, Mom, how can you? She says, well, I don't want it. What the heck do I want it for? I said, well, I'll take it. And then I thought to myself, well, what do I want it for? Just, I want to have it because I don't want my mother to throw it away. But at some point, who really wants it? And I just begin to think about the amount of time and aggravation that we keep with maybe our collection of Hummels or your collection of Elvis plates. I don't know, whatever it is that you decide to collect, what might be important to you is not nearly as valuable to somebody else. So as you begin to think about downsizing, as you begin to think about passing memories, passing items on to the next generation, I'd really like you to give some consideration as to what you really could get for money on these things. Do you want the appreciation that someone else wants to keep it in their home, or are you really looking at it as a collectible? I always find it fascinating that so many people will pay insurance riders for some of their, what they view as collectibles, their Hummel collection. I mean, really? We're going to buy an insurance policy? I mean, the insurance companies eat that stuff up. They're basically taking your money. They say thank you very much, because who wants to steal a Hummel collection? Really? I mean, really? And some of the collections that we try to insure, kind of ridiculous, I think. You know, there's a famous painting that you think, for instance, we have, I'm trying to think of the woman's name. It's a painting. It's a woman and three kids. And I'm trying to think of the name of this painting that my mother bought down in Florida. It's an enormous painting. It's probably 5 feet by 3 feet in size. It's huge. And everyone says, well, it's so, what is the woman's name? It is Edna Hibble. Edna Hibble, I think, is her name. That's a guess, but I think that's what it is. And I just, you know, people say, well, Mark, you can't get rid of it. It's so expensive. It's so expensive. It's not an original. It is a lithograph, which I guess she painted over and made it look somewhat original. And yes, she signed it. And yes, there's a certificate of authenticity. But what do you do with that stuff? Look, the designs that we have in our home, it is Edna Hibble. So, yeah, we have a crack research team working on that. What do we do with some of that stuff? We keep it for memory, but then we pass it on. Do we really want to pass it on? Folks, enough already. Enough. Figure out the stuff that you really want to pass on to the kids. See if they want it. And if they don't, move on. I'm watching too many retirees these days struggle and suffer with trying to understand why the kids don't appreciate and don't want some of the memories that you want to pass on. Well, meanwhile, when you die, and here's the reality, when you die, the kids will inherit your money. And I assure you, they won't be nearly as prudent as you were with the money when they inherit it. Think about what happened to you. If someone were to hand you $1,000 right now, would you save it or would you spend it? Chances are you do something with it, right? So all of a sudden your kids find out they just inherited $500,000. You think they're going to save it or they're going to spend it? Yeah, they'll save some of it, but they're going to spend some of it too. You know, we love free stuff. Anything that comes to us by way of free usually is fun. It doesn't matter whether you go to a doctor's convention or a plumber's convention or a janitor's convention. Every one of those conventions have exhibit halls. And you know what they have at the exhibit halls? Giveaways. Everybody's got pens and sticky pads and a tornado in a bottle or whatever it might be that they will just give away. And everybody wants to run around with their big bags and get all the free stuff they can. Meanwhile, you don't use half the stuff. And the other thing is you could afford to buy any of the stuff that you see there, but we all like free stuff. We all like free stuff. But then we capture all those things. I got bags and bags and bags and bags of that stuff up in my attic, and it's still sitting in bags and bags and bags and bags. Do I throw it away? No. Folks, we need to realize that nobody wants our stuff. We got to stop hoarding it, stop keeping it, and just getting it out. Yes, I know that takes time. It takes time to get through it. The best thing that I ever did, and I did it on a Thanksgiving, on the Friday after Thanksgiving, while my wife went Black Friday shopping. I called 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or any of those junk places. You can call any of them. But I called 1-800-GOT-JUNK. I had them come over to my house. They went down to my basement. I put orange stickers all over stuff in my basement. Anything that had an orange sticker, I wanted them to take and get rid of. No, I didn't let them touch the china, because I knew I'd be in trouble for that one. But they took all sorts of junk. 3 months went by before my wife even noticed that the basement was cleaned out. Folks, we don't even know what we even have in our house. We don't know what we have in our attic, in our basement, yet we hold on to it for some crazy reason. If you're thinking about planning on moving out of that house, going to a retirement community, downsizing a little bit, you got to start getting the stuff out. Do it smart, do it now. And I'm going to go take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
The blockbuster 2017 musical season has been announced for Bill Haney's North Shore Music Theater, and you won't want to miss a show. 76 Join in the parade when the classic American musical The Music Man marches on stage to open the season in June. In July, you're invited to be our guest when we present the magical family production of Disney's Beauty and the Beast. The summer continues with one monster of a hit show,
It's Alive!
Young Frankenstein, the hilarious Mel Brooks musical. Then join us in the fall for a brand new production of the Tony Award-winning musical, Evita. The season will end with a dazzling production of 42nd Street, the Tap Dance Spectacular. Become a season subscriber and see all five shows from the best seats at the lowest prices. Book your tickets at nsmt.org and make a memory to last a lifetime.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, where we've been providing financial planning and investment advice to individuals and families living on the North Shore since 1968. We do so by providing financial advice in a language you can understand. And we are here each and every Sunday from 8 to 9 a.m. to provide that advice over these airways as we sit and overlook the North Beverly train station right here on Enon Street in Beverly. Hope you're having a great Sunday. We are halfway through our show. We talked earlier about some tax tips. We talked about the fact that if you've been getting a big refund on your tax return or you owed a lot of taxes this year, we talked about some strategies on how you might consider minimizing that in the years to come. In the second segment, we talked a little bit about what you need to do with all the junk that you have in the house, all the stuff that you're thinking about saving for the next generation and what to do with it, or the amount of stuff that you have in your house that you think has value to it. And what we're really finding out is that most of the stuff in your house is worthless, absolutely worthless. If you got a few items, that's fine. But for the most part, it's not worth anything. And you should get rid of it, especially if you're thinking about downsizing your home. I mean, when's the last time you saw your kids for a wedding gift go out and buy china? Who did that? You know, my wife made me when we got married. We had to not only, let me back that up. When we got married, my mom decided to give us my grandmother's china. Great. Classic kind of china. It was this white, I don't even know, it's bone china, I guess, with a gold trim on it. And I don't even know. My wife was all excited, but I had no idea what it was. But it was a set of eight. And my wife said, well, the set of eight's not going to be enough for us. We need to get a set of 14. So we went to this website called replacements.com where you can buy replacement pieces for your china. So we bought plates and then bread plates and then soup bowls and all the other accoutrement that went with this thing. And it cost a fortune to buy all this stuff. I couldn't believe how expensive it was. And then you got to buy the china. I mean the glassware, of course, right? So the glassware, we got to get champagne glasses, wine glasses, and water goblets. And we got all of those. And so they all display very nicely in the break front in my living room. We will be married 25 years this September, and I don't believe we've used it more than once. But we had to buy it. I mean, you're talking thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars spent on china. Now, here's the reality. We might have spent it. What would we get for it if we tried to sell it? Very little, because nobody wants it anymore. People want to change up their dishes. The way we eat is much more casual these days. We want to have choices. We want to change our flatware. We want to change our dishes. We want to change everything. It's different. We need, and like I said earlier in the show, that I still have a box of china in the bottom, in the basement of my house that's Laura's grandmother's that we're not allowed to do anything with. We can't sell it, can't get rid of it. It just has to sit there. It has to sit there. What we have, we all have that stuff. I'm not talking about my house. We all have that stuff in our house. We got to move it out. It's not worth it. It's heavy. And we got to get someone to get it out of there, because you know what? You want to downsize, and you don't want the reason that you don't want it, that you can't downsize, to be, oh, I just don't want to go through the move. That's a big reason why a lot of people don't downsize. Did you know that? It's the aggravation and the emotion of moving everything out. And unfortunately, sometimes we wait too long and we miss out on some great opportunities. So just something to think about. The other thing I want you to think about is let's get young for a minute. Let's think about school. Let's think about our kids. You know, many of them are graduating in the weeks and months to follow. And when we think about how prepared our children are for entering the real world, I worry. They might have decent STEM skills, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. But what do they have from a perspective of personal finance skills? And I'm not talking about what a 401k is at this point, or what a stock or a bond is. But why would a student, I think I've told you this story a few times, I'll tell it again. Usually a couple times a year I get invited to this class that they hold at North Andover High School. You can sign up actually for a personal finance class. About 30 kids get into it. So I go in and the first question I ask of these kids is, I said, how many of you own a debit or an ATM card? Every kid in the room raises their hand. And I said, what does it cost to take money out of an ATM machine? And the general answer that I get from the kids is $3 to $5. And I then say to them, well, on average, what do you generally take out in cash from the ATM machine? The general answer is $20. So I said to them, wait a second. Would you pay, if there was an item that cost $20 to buy, would you pay $25 for it, even if the price tag said $20? And every kid says, of course not. I said, well, you do that every day. Sometimes it's you're paying $20 for something, but you're actually paying $23 for something that's only $20. And they don't understand it. And I said, look, to take money out of an ATM machine shouldn't cost you any money. It's free. Well, that's only if you go to the bank that you have your ATM card or your bank card with. I said, okay. So you got to plan appropriately. You got to plan properly. Most kids, most teenagers, aren't going much further than their own town or the town connected to it. Chances are that the bank that their account is affiliated with, they drive by every day. And the ATM machines run 24/7. But they're willing to pay $5 to get 20. I think that is a travesty. And no one's doing anything about it. You know, people will complain. People will complain about the banks and the financial institutions getting rich and making more and more money. What they're doing is they're just preying on your stupidity. And the banks have said straight on out that they will come into the classrooms and teach your children better financial skills, better personal financial skills. Yet most of the schools say, no, thank you, we don't want it. So here's something that came out of the Wall Street Journal just this past week. It talked about financial literacy in the world. And it asks a series of questions of students all around the world, thousands and thousands and thousands of students. The questions are based on four categories: inflation, interest rates, compounding, and diversification. The country that has the highest in financial literacy, the highest scores in financial literacy, are tied. There's three countries that are tied. We're 71% pass the financial literacy course. Only 71% pass it. And it's tied is Norway, Denmark, Sweden, the Scandinavian countries. After that, number four, that passes with a grade of 68%, or 68% of those taking the tests passed. Oh, by the way, there were 150,000 adults in 148 countries that took this test. In Norway, Denmark, and Sweden, they ranked first, and they scored 71% of them passed. Number four was Israel at 68. Canada tied also at 68 for fifth. Where does the United States fall? 14th. And only 57% of U.S. citizens passed a basic financial literacy test. So let me try to give you some context around what happens there. What's the likelihood that a student heading off to college has had a personal finance class before they got to college? Well, did you know that there are only 5 states? That's 10% of the states that we have here in America. We have 50 states in America, not 52, not 51. There's 50 states in America. 5 states only require high school students to take a standalone personal finance course. It's required as part of your public school curriculum. 12 states require personal finance instruction that can be integrated into another course. Basically, it's practical personal finance questions that are integrated into a math course, into a science course, into a daily life skills course. 20 states require high school students to take a course in economics. Okay, economics is much bigger picture stuff. Why does, you know, the big economics question that I usually bring when I go into the classroom and try to speak is I'll bring in 3 bottles of Dasani water. We'll bring it into like my son's 8th grade class. And I'll say, this bottle of water costs $4.50. This bottle of water costs $2. And this bottle of water costs 14 cents. Why are they all priced differently despite the fact that they are the same exact bottle of water? That is the basic example of economics. And so we try to walk the kids through explaining why that happens. Well, when you go to a Red Sox game or you go to a Celtics game, that bottle of water is $4.50. But you know that you could buy that same bottle of water if you bought a 12-pack or 24-pack market basket at 14 cents a bottle. But why are we willing to pay $4.50 for that bottle, for that one bottle, when you could buy a 24-pack and a half at Market Basket? It's called supply and demand. That's all that is, supply and demand. You go to a local convenience store, and you know the kids say, hey, can you get me a water, Mom? And you go running into the store, and you pay $2 for a bottle of water at your local Cumberland Farms. But you could have just as easily had waters put in your car for a lot less money. And I think one of the things that's interesting is that we pay a lot for convenience. Here's another talk about convenience, paying for convenience. There was a story that came out last week about promposals. Have you heard about this thing? This is the new thing. All the kids doing fancy or elaborate promposals. Did you know that the average, I did not believe this, by the way, and I still don't believe that it's true. But they said across the nation, when you look at a nationwide survey, the average student spends $1,000 on prom and promposal related items. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And I look at my son, Jerry, asked someone to go to the prom, I don't know, a few weeks ago. And Jerry took out a piece of white, poster board and wrote something on the poster board. And held it up. It cost him, I don't know, 3 cents. And it worked just fine. But the fascinating thing about the infographic that we saw about promposals is that people whose household incomes are under $40,000 are spending 40% more on promposals and everything related to it than those that are making more than $40,000. Why do you think that is? That does not make any sense. If you're making over $40,000, it says the average person is spending $800, still a lot of money, $800 between prom, limo, dinner, dress, clothing, promposal, whatever it is. But the younger, I mean, those that are making under $40,000 are spending over $1,000. Why is that? I think that's fascinating. Well, there's a lot more to learn about personal finance in our schools and what our kids really aren't thinking about and what we're not doing a good enough job teaching them about preparing for the real world. I've got more of that information that I want to share with you. I want to ask you a question. Are you approaching retirement? Have you been offered an early retirement package from General Electric or one of the area businesses here on the North Shore in the Merrimack Valley? A lot of those early retirement packages are being offered, and we're fielding calls from many, many folks who have questions. Do I take the pension? Which option should I select? Should I take the lump sum? Is it worth taking the severance offer that they give me? What will the tax impact be? Can I afford it? Those are questions that you should be asking of a certified financial planner. The major decisions when it comes to money, you should not be making those alone, and you should not be making those with emotions in mind. You have to be rational. You got to think that through. You have to have all the right people in the room to address all of the issues. And I want to help you do that. If now's the time to get serious about your retirement planning, please, please, please give my office a call. 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. No one's in the office today, but certainly leave a message if you'd like, or call tomorrow, 978-531-8108, and we will schedule a free initial consultation for you. Just one other quick reminder, if you'd like to get our free newsletter that comes out each and every Friday, it's called Planning Pointers, and it will land in your inbox at 10:30 every Friday. Go to my website, friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, to E's and a D, financial.com. Click on the button that says sign up for Mark's newsletter, and boom, you will be all signed up. We'll talk a little bit about personal finance and why we need to provide that education to our kids as they're in high school and as they head off to college. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman, President and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, and soon to be moving to 41 Cross Street in Peabody. But more of that to come in the weeks and months to follow as we begin to build out our new office location, which will certainly be a lot more visible. You'll be able to see it. Our office right now is located behind Shaw's Supermarket. There's that red brick building. Yes, it says UBS on it. It says McLean Holloway on the building. We are kind of tucked up on the third floor. I've been there almost 15 years. But in our new location that we'll have in September, we will not only be much more easy to find, we'll be right across the street, actually right next door to Long's Jewelers over on Cross Street, across the street from Macy's. But you will see our sign on the building. We will be out there sharing space with Arto Forno, the new Italian restaurant that's going to show up on the first floor, owned by the same people that own Palana and Daniela. So you know it's going to be a great place to go for dinner. When we last chatted a few minutes ago, we were talking about personal finance in the schools. And I just find it incredibly discouraging when I see how ill-prepared our children are when it comes to making money decisions. Now, personal finance doesn't have to be understanding the stock market or understanding mutual funds or anything like that, though I think it would be nice if they understood some of the basics. But kids just don't understand basic personal finance principles. They don't understand debt. Children are more likely to have debt before they have assets. I think that's fair to say. Children are also more likely to get into an accident before they get pulled over for drunk driving. Now, you might think where did that come from, Mark? Well, that's the reality. At 16 years old, you go to driver's ed and you sit through the classroom. All of my kids have done it. I have five kids. Three of them have already gone through the courses. And every time they get back from the driver's ed course, when they're all done, they've all graduated, I ask them the first question. I said, so tell me, what do you do when you get into an accident? And they go, call you? That's generally their answer. I said, wait a second. You just spent 6 weeks at a driver's ed course and nobody taught you what to do when you get into an accident. Dad, that's not in the book. It's not in the booklet. You know, they have to follow the booklet. This is a government-run program. We got to follow the booklet. But you know what all my kids do know how to do? They know how to handle themselves. And they know what their rights are when they get pulled over by a police officer for drunk driving. Now I'm thinking to myself, you're 16 years old. They're teaching you what to do when you get pulled over for drunk driving at 16. You're not old enough. You're still 4 to 5 years away from being even legal to drink, let alone they're teaching you now something that chances are won't or could happen, I suppose, but they're teaching you what to do when you get pulled over and what your rights are when a police officer pulls you over, rather than teach you what's more likely to happen in the first 6 months of you having a license, and that is what happens when you get into an accident. I think that is a travesty. I think that is an embarrassment to every driver's ed course that's out there. It's an embarrassment to the Registry of Motor Vehicles. And I think we as parents need to be sure that we are educating our children right or pressing the Registry of Motor Vehicles to get that in the curriculum. That is an embarrassing thing. Look, the insurance companies, I bet any insurance company out there would love, they would write a check right now to say, why don't you just go to the, the safety insurance driver's ed class. I bet they'd even pay for it for you. Sure, they'd want you to get their insurance from them, but they'd also teach you what to do if you get into an accident. But no, we can't do that. That's not the way the system works. Everybody's entitled. This is crazy, folks. Our kids need to know what happens when they get into an accident. They need to know what to do, not what to do when they get pulled over for drunk driving. If you get pulled over for drunk driving, the police officer should be able to do whatever the hell he wants to do to you, as far as I'm concerned. If the police officer says, get out of the car, you get out of the damn car. You don't give him attitude. You follow the instructions. Whether you're drunk or not, you follow the instructions of a police officer. That's my opinion. But if you get into an accident, whether you've been hit from behind, hit in front, sideswiped, hit a deer, whatever it is, you need to know what to do. And that's an embarrassing thing that no kid coming out of driver's ed seems to know what the hell to do when they get out of that program. That's sad. Here's another thing that's sad, is our kids don't understand debt. They seem to think debt's a good thing. They use their credit cards, or basically what they do is they have, well, a lot of kids basically have a zero, they have a zero percentage debit card. And you know who that is? That's you, the parent. Kids believe they don't, they say, oh, can I borrow some money from you? And how often do you actually expect them to pay it back? So basically they have a zero percentage debit card that goes beyond what they have in their own bank account because they don't even want to spend their own money. Look, as I'm sitting here right now, as I'm sitting here doing this radio show, I get a text from my daughter that says, Dad, I need to talk to you. I need to borrow $750 because I needed to get my brakes replaced on my car. Now, if I think it's funny. She wants to borrow $750. Do I have to talk to her about a payment plan back? No. And does my daughter have $750 in her own account? Yes, she does. So these are the conversations that we need to have with our children. Now, granted, when they're younger, of course, we have more and more of an obligation to help them out. But as they get older, when do we start cutting the chain? I see people in their 50s and their 60s still paying for the phone bill for their 20 and 30-year-old children. Enough already. They're still paying for their automobile insurance. They're still helping them out and providing daycare costs to the kids so both of the kids can work while mom and dad have to struggle a little bit with their own retirement because they don't get to do what they want. They want to go on vacation, but no, they got responsibilities to take care of the grandkid. Folks, it's time that we get our kids out of our bank accounts. It's time that our kids stop viewing us as the bank of mom and dad. Our kids are making more money than we've ever made before in our lifetimes, and they have the potential to make even more. Yet, they seem to think they need to spend at the level to what they're earning rather than doing what you and I did, was we lived within our means until we could afford to live in a greater level of means. When do we say no? When do we say no? How do we continue to agree to let our children go to a private college and pay $63,000 for an art history major's degree? Or they go and spend, they go to a private university and they say, what do you want to be, what's your major going to be? I don't know. But yeah, we still pay it? Why? So is it for our own ego? So we can say, oh, my son goes to Harvard. My son goes to, you know, Wake Forest, whatever it might, I don't care, wherever it is. Why do we do that? We got to stop being friends to our kids. We have to start being parents to our kids. And I know that hurts sometimes. Because sometimes the only friends we have are our own kids. We still have to be parents. And our kids will respect us because of it. Just like as you begin to get older, you need to let your children know that you can't afford to pay for certain things that you used to pay for. And your kids have to be willing to accept that. I think they will. But sometimes your kids don't have no idea how much you might even be struggling because you refuse to tell them. Your kids are not 13 years old anymore. They're older. They're adults. They understand personal responsibility. They understand feelings, and we need to focus on that. It's part of the personal finance responsibilities that we have as parents. So think about that. What are we doing to contribute to the personal financial education of our children? Do we run around carrying large credit card debt? Do we show our children that it's okay to just pay the minimum balance? Are we showing our children how to beat the system? And you, you know what I mean by beating the system. What are we doing to educate our children? Because they're certainly not getting it in schools. And as you well know, unless you're working as a teacher, working for the government, your kids are going to be on their own when it comes to supporting themselves in retirement, just like you are. Perhaps you don't have a pension anymore. Perhaps you never had a pension. Maybe all you have is Social Security. Chances are when your kids hit retirement age, they're not going to have a pension. There's going to be 401k or some kind of retirement accounts that they can draw upon. Perhaps there'll be Social Security, and I think there will be, though it might start it a little bit later. But it's going to be up to them. Is it possible? Could it be possible that your kids are just sitting around waiting for an inheritance? Folks, that is very possible. I know you don't want to hear that, but I see this happening all the time. Let's say you have $500,000 that you're using to support your lifestyle, that you're using that $500,000 along with your Social Security, whatever other income. You know what other asset you generally have that you'll never spend? Your house. And what's your house go for right now? Four, five, seven, who knows what, how many hundreds of thousands of dollars. That money's going to get inherited by your kids. What kind of money did you inherit from your parents? How about the generation before that? Remember what a house was worth back in the 70s and the 80s? 49.9, 59.9. And you needed some of that money to bury mom and dad. World's different today. We're leaving an enormous amount of money to our children, and they know it. They have access to everything. They can find out what the value of your house is worth. They can do a salary.com check and find out what the average income of someone is, what someone does in the job that you have. Certainly, if you're in a public position, they can even find out your salary. Kids are resourceful. They know how to get around. They know how to find information, and they nuzzle it all away. And they have all that information. I'm not saying that they're being devious. I'm just saying that they're being informed. So they're trying to make a decision as to how they should live their financial life based upon what could happen 15, 20, 30 years from now. Should I live for today knowing that, hey, chances are I don't have to worry about retirement, or at least I'll get a nice retirement boost when I hit 60, because who knows how much longer mom and dad will live after that. Folks, this is the stuff that nobody wants to talk about. This is the elephant in the room. This is the stuff that we go, oh, not going to be my kids. And it may not be your kids. But as someone that has done this since 1960, well, I've been doing it since 1991. My father's been doing it since 1968. All I can tell you is that we have one death a month that we see in my office. And that's been going on for probably 7 or 8 years. And just as the way you think that your kids will react when money comes into the next generation, it's going to be different from what happens in reality. I'm promising you that's what happens. And you know what? When you're gone, you don't have the control. So folks, take the responsibility. Give your kids some great personal financial education. If you want to spend, if you plan to leave money to the kids, why don't you spend some of it now and enjoy it with them? Go for those experiences. Make an extraordinary experience with your kids and your grandkids. And I've left you with lots of things to think about today. Perhaps I've even kind of nudged you a little bit to get a little angry and maybe do something, and that's okay. But I'll be back here again next Sunday with more financial advice in a language you can understand. You've been listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Thanks for tuning into Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. During the show, specific investments may have been discussed. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Please consult a certified financial planner, tax professional, or attorney to determine what is appropriate for you. Consider your investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of an investment company before investing. That's because investing involves risk, including a loss of principal. A prospectus contains this and other information about mutual funds, variable annuities, and variable annuity subaccounts. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making an investment. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment and financial planning advice is offered through Mark's firm, Friedman Financial, which is a registered investment advisor and a separate entity from LPL. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next Sunday at 8 a.m.
The prior show was a paid program that does not express the views, opinions, or beliefs of North Shore 104.9, the station management, its employees, or staff.